And Jimmy knows what you're going through because he goes through it too. He's here to talk about it. It's seed and feed, chemicals and compost, vaccinations and irrigation. It's time for Today in Ag with Jimmy Clark.
Good day to all you great stewards of the land. It's Today in Ag with Jimmy Clark on 96.5 KECO. The cold front is on its way. I just looked at the temperature map, and it is at Cheyenne. Cheyenne's 83, Camargo's 83, Arnett's 79, and it's 91 degrees here. Sorry, but that wind out of the south. West to west now, so the north wind's almost here. It's 91 degrees here, 94 in Mangum. We got winds 18 to 20 miles an hour. So anyway, I'll have your Hobart Farm and Garden Long Ranger forecast here later in the hour. But right now, I would love to say happy birthday to Ashley Thornborough. She's the CEO of Southbound over at Slayer, and I believe she's 29 years old today. I heard it was a little older, but I'm not one to give out actual birthday, how old they are, of women on the air today. But 29, she's looking good for 29, though. We got a couple things to go over. I got Professor Paul Beck will be on the show here in our next segment. From the OSU Stillwater. He is Extension Livestock Specialist for OSU, and he's a good one, too. He's a very informative guy. Right now, soybeans and grains all plunged in overnight trading amid favorable weather in much of the United States Midwest. Rain is expected in most of the Midwest, including in Iowa and Illinois, the biggest producers of the beans and corn in the U.S., will give crops a drink of water as they finish maturing. About 38% of the soybeans are dropping their leaves as of September 12th, last week, while 37% of the U.S. corn crop was mature, according to the Department of Agriculture. 4% of the corn was harvested as of last week. And I seen another article where it was around 6% already. A lot of corn down around the Hobart area, it's already been harvested, and I'm going to try to get some numbers on some area farmers down in Kiowa and Greer County that harvest some corn and see what kind of yield they had. The USDA is scheduled to release its weekly crop progress report. This week's will be the first of the year to show what percentage of soybeans have been harvested. The demand picture was fuzzy last week as the Ag Department said on Wednesday that China canceled shipments totaling 132,000 metric tons and an unnamed buyer nixed cargoes of 196,000 tons. On Thursday and Friday, however, the USDA reported separate sales of 132,000 metric tons each to China for delivery in 2021-22 marketing year that started on September 1st, a couple weeks ago. Also weighing on the prices are reports that grain export terminals along the Gulf Coast are returning to normal operations after recovering from Hurricane Ida that hit them at the end of August. They said last week that it expects the facility at Myrtle Grove, Louisiana, to be fully operational by the height of this year's harvest. Rutgers reported on Thursday over the weekend that barge costs, which I've got that later in my show, to move grain to export terminals has surged due to problems after Ida hit on August 31st. This could slow exports just ahead of the U.S. soybean and corn harvest. Soybean futures for November delivery fell 12 cents to $12.72 a bushel overnight on the Chicago Board of Trade. Soy meal lost $2.90 to $339.30 a short ton, and soy oil dropped 0.072 cents to 55.54 cents a pound. Corn futures for December delivery declined 8.25 cents to 5.19 a bushel. Wheat futures for December delivery dropped 6 cents to $7.02 a bushel, while Kansas City futures lost 7 cents to $7.06 a future. Hedge funds and other large investors cut their net loss positions or bets on high prices in corn to the lowest level in 11 months, while also slashing bullish bean positions, according to the Commodity Futures Trading Commission. Speculators held a net 197,757 corn futures contract in the 7 days it ended on September 14th, in a report they said. That's down from 202,200 contracts a week earlier, and the smallest such position since the week ended on October 13th of 2020 of last year. Investors held a net long 50,444 soybean future contracts last week, down from 54,300 a week earlier, and the lowest bullish position since August 11th of 2020 of last year. For wheat, money managers held a long net position of 36,909 hard red winter wheat futures, down from 40,408 contracts a week earlier. That marks the smallest such position since July 27th, the government said. Speculators turned bearish on soft red winter wheat futures last week, holding a net short position or bets on lower prices. There was 10,131 contracts. That's also the largest net short position since the week that ended on July 20th in its report. The weekly commitments of traders report from the Commodity Futures Trading Commission shows traded positions and futures market. The report provides positions held by commercial traders. Well, there's some storms expected in Kansas and Iowa today, even along the Oklahoma state line up there. Thunderstorms are expected to roll across parts of the central and eastern Kansas today and tonight, bringing wind and rain to the region, according to the National Weather Service. Wind speeds are forecast from 25 to 35 miles an hour, with gusts up to 50 miles an hour possible. The National Weather Service said in its report early this morning, small hail and will also be possible. The storms may refire tomorrow morning along the southern Kansas near the Oklahoma border. Further north, in parts of central Iowa, showers and thunderstorms are forecast this afternoon, according to the National Weather Service. There is a slight risk of severe storms, with a main threat from damaging wind gusts. An isolated large hail report or tornado might be in there. So anyway, you guys keep an eye on the storms tonight. We're not expecting any rain here in our listening area as of right now, but it's the weather. It can change in a heartbeat. Well, when I get back, I'm going to talk to Paul Beck, Extension Livestock Specialist. We're going to be talking about the Marvin Clemmie Range Research Station Field Day. We're going to be talking about insects and anything else coming up, and he's going to update us on his supplement feeding deal that he had going out on the Marvin Clemmie Range. So, happy Monday, everybody. I'll be right back after this. It's the Day in Ag on 96.5 KECO.
We learned in grade school 1 plus 1 equals 2 and 2 plus 2 equals 4. So what does quality feed equal? Results you can be proud of. It's simple math with a little common sense. Barnes Feed Service in Hober, Oklahoma has done the math and mixed years of common sense into their feeds so you'll get the results you deserve. And remember, their name ends with service, something they take pride in every day. See their ads in the Penny News and check them out on Facebook.
We raise registered Red Angus. We sell bulls, heifers, seed stock quality type. Red Angus offer superior marbling. Docility is probably the biggest selling point for Red Angus, the maternal traits, and some heat tolerance. Benji White, B&L Red Angus. BLRedAngus.com on Facebook. Follow us at B&L Red Angus.
Lori White, B&L Red Angus. BLRedAngus.com. You can find us on Facebook by searching B&L Red Angus.
Mosey on down to Hobart Stockyard's weekly cattle sale at Highway 183 North in Hobart, Oklahoma. The sale is every Wednesday at 9:30. If you need to consign, call Rex Fleming at 580-331-8547. They receive cattle all day Mondays and Tuesdays. Buyers can bid in person or online. Register at lmaauction.com or download the LMA Ringside app. Hobart Stockyards, where we want your business and we do appreciate it.
We truly are a family at First National Bank. When you have a family member that's sick, everyone knows. When something's happened within your family, when you have celebrations, we truly are a family at First National Bank and Trust. We're very proud of the institution that we work for. We're very proud of each other. It is like a family. We call it our bank family. I'm Tammy DeGarmo, and I help make the difference at First National Bank and Trust of Elk City and Sayre.
Member FDIC.
The Day in Ag is back with Jimmy Clark.
All right. Welcome back. It is 91 degrees. Heat index is 90. The wind is now straight out of the west, 14 miles an hour. Wind gust up to 21 miles an hour. So I'm going to say before the show is over, the north wind will be rolling through our listening area here pretty hard. It's already up Cheyenne. So our first major cold front of the year is almost here, and I'll update you on the Long Ranger here in the next couple segments. Well, we got a couple things to talk about today. Just a friendly reminder from the OSU Extension Office and Sayre from Zach Henderson this Thursday at the WTC in Elk City here, the Western Technology Center. The early season wheat management meeting will be there. One CEV credit will be offered and only open to Beckham County and or Beckham and Ouachita counties. Call the extension office to RSVP. And then Friday, September 24th, there will be a peanut blasting meeting at the Beckham County Fairgrounds from 9:30 to 12 o'clock. And that's where they bring in sandblasters and they blast the peanuts to see if they'll hold up to a windstorm out there in those sand fields. No, I'm just kidding. Anyway, they're going to be testing, see where the maturity is on the fairgrounds. And then coming up next week, September 29th, from 7:30 to 11:30 at the Marvin Fleming Range Research Station, there will be a field day. And on the phone with me right now is the famous professor from Oklahoma State University. He's the Extension Livestock Specialist, Mr. Paul Beck. Happy Monday, Paul.
Well, happy Monday to you, Jimmy. How's everything going?
Oh, it's good. We're just, we're waiting on that north wind to hit here in about the next hour. It's time for a cool down. It's almost into September and we're still in the 90s.
Yeah, I kind of think we've got some indication that fall is going to come close. That first storm front moving through, that's a welcome sign. Hopefully it'll pull up some moisture some way.
Yeah, we need some. I was out at Shamrock a couple times this weekend across state line there in Texas, and there were lots of people sowing wheat, rye, true to cow, whatever they were sowing, but that dust was a flying, so we need some rain.
Yes, sir. Okay. It's time to get it in the ground one way or another.
Yep. Yeah,
if we get a big rain, it's going to keep you out of the field for a week or so, especially in clean till situations. And, you know, gosh, then you're going to be looking at getting it planted in the middle of October, and, you know, chances of getting any pasture are sure enough over by the time you start planting then.
Yeah, and it sure is. I'm looking at your the Clemmie Range Research Station field day list that you sent me. You guys got a lot going on out there.
Yes, I'm really proud of what we've been doing out at the Clemmie Range. One of my goals I wanted to do whenever I came back to OSU was to reopen that station and start doing some research in the area that's going to be a benefit to the producers out there in western Oklahoma, and I think we've done a good job. We're really staying busy, and I think we've got some really neat stuff to share.
Well, you when you were on the show here, it's been well over a month ago. You stopped by, and there was that deal, the your supplement feeding deal that you had going on when you were researching 2 pound, 4 pound, 6 pound, all that good stuff. I got a lot of great feedback on that, and they appreciated the information you gave out that day.
Well, that's great to know. Sometimes I question whether anybody thinks it's as important as I do. I'm glad you got some good feedback.
Oh yeah, that was interesting because I was waiting. I would have lost money on it, but the one you end up saying the best bang for your buck was one notch away from mine, so I wouldn't have lost too much money. So.
Good.
What do you got after you got your registration and your welcome? What do you guys got going on?
So that research station, probably one of the best kept secrets in Oklahoma State research capabilities. It's been there for over 30 years. We had a field day whenever I was in graduate school, and long about 90 or 91, and that's the last one that we've had over there. So we're going to go over, you know, some of the station history and some of the projects that has been conducted there in the last 30 years, you know, there at first, and you know, they did some really nice long-term stocking rate type of research to look at the, you know, without supplementation, where's the best, you know, stocking rate for these summer graze steers. They moved in, they've done some weed control research, lots of cow research over the last 20 years. And right now, you know, some of the other research that we're doing. Then we're going to move over. There's what they call NEON. It's the National Ecological Observatory Network. It's a USDA group or federal government group, and they're doing climate evaluations. They've got a really nice big weather station there that they pick up, you know, differences in moisture and temperature and soil temperature and just about anything you can imagine. And then they also, out in all the pastures surrounding that weather station, they do evaluations on insects and you know, different vertebrate herbivores and changes in range conditions. So it's a really neat long-term, you know, evaluation, and they're going to give some presentations about what their research or their capabilities are as far as observations and then what they've seen changed over the years.
Yeah, I googled that up, and it's pretty intense what they're doing and exact, but it's very interesting at the same time.
Yeah, and it's of interest to people, you know, not just local but around the world, as far as, you know, what, you know, if there is change in climate or moisture, and how does that affect both the wildlife and range conditions?
Well, they couldn't pick a better area to figure out whether it's wet or dry, because we can go from one extreme to the other out here.
Yeah, and we've seen in the short time I've been back doing research out there, we've seen dry year and a wet year, and you know, dry and wet year, and you know, it's western Oklahoma, so. You know, as one friend of mine said, you know, we, you know, aim for the average and hope for the best. There's no normal year.
Well, it's just like this year, you know, starting in April, we started getting late April, we started getting showers into May, and just rain. Every time it said 10% chance of rain, you could bet on the dotted line that it was going to rain, and we just come out of that mini drought. And then, a little bit of our listening area here last week got a little bit of rain. Most of them didn't even get a shower, but it's been dry since I seen you here. So that just tells you how it can change from one extreme to the other.
Yeah, we started out, we were short on groundwater as far as in the ponds there at the station. We knew we were going to have to carry water to the cattle, and then it started raining and everything filled up. So, you know, we went from dry spring to a wet summer to now a dry fall.
Well, this deal that you got going on right after the neon deal, is that what you've been working on?
Yes, we're going to talk about the distiller's grains cubes, the research that's been sponsored by Master Hand Milling out there. It's a extruded cube. We talked about it a little bit when I was on the show before. You know, it's a really nice product. It really kind of expands the use of distiller's grains to a lot of these extensive range conditions. We're not tied to feeding it into a, you know, a feed bunk. We don't lose a lot when we feed it on the, or we don't lose any when we feed it on the ground, and the wind sure doesn't blow those cubes away. So it's a really nice product, and you know, we're going to talk about the research that we did in the last 2 years where we were looking at comparing our normal stocking rate with supplementation during the late summer only to, you know, increasing our stocking rate by a third and feeding it throughout the summer at a higher rate.
Right.
And not only are we going to talk about what we saw while they were out on pasture, we also had the opportunity to track those cattle through finishing. Dusty Turner, the CEO of Master Hand Milling, he's really interested in, you know, how, you know, the supplementation will affect not just the rancher, but also how will it affect downstream production. So, you know, looking at a lot of those, you know, we may be able to get really good gains on grass, but if we're really hurting the cattle whenever they go on feed, you know, that's kind of a probably not the best bet. But
yeah,
you know, we're seeing some really nice results on subsequent performance as well.
Is the 4 pound a day still winning?
You know, those cattle, whenever we were, you know, feeding the higher rate and, you know, they gained more on grass, we did have some compensatory gain on some cattle that, you know, didn't get supplemented early in the feeding season. But those cattle that were supplemented at the higher rate had less days on feed, about 21 less days on feed, which that corresponds to, you know, a lot less grain that those cattle have to be fed and a lot, you know, cheaper total performance whenever we cut off that many days on feed.
Oh, yeah, a lot. I mean, I don't know what your numbers are per head per day, but I'm just sitting here thinking, like some of those that I was feeding, that's a lot of money. It adds up.
Sure does.
Yeah, so, well, when you get to talking about that, it looks like the firebugs are coming in.
Yes, sir. We the Natural Resources Department, the NREM is what we call them, they range scientists, they've been doing some research out there as well, looking at four cows just patch burning different spots where the cows didn't graze the year before or had less utilization of those areas. And so when we burn, we remove all the standing dead and it's all fresh regrowth, we can move grazing distribution quite a bit to those patches. And they're looking not only at just the normal spring type burn, but at also some different timings of burning and seeing what works the best as far as getting cattle to utilize these different areas in these large pastures.
Well, I did something like that down there at my place, west of Willow, and there was about, oh, I don't know, 60, 70 acres of that old world blue stem stuff that, the you know, when it's mature and full of growth, the cattle might use it for bedding, but they're not going to chew on it any. And I didn't want to burn it because of the area where I was at. So I just went through there and I shredded it down as low as I could And we got a rain that following week, and within a week, those cows just hung out over there eating that fresh growth. So, I mean, basically the same thing.
Yeah, if we can drive some fresh regrowth, you know, that will move those cows. So you don't have to mow the entire area. You can move them to different areas of some of these large pastures just by, you know, pushing for some fresher growth in that area, and they'll come find it.
Oh, yeah, they did. They definitely did. But they, well, that'll be interesting. And then also, you got a couple more things on the agenda there, the Old World Blue Stem and the wildlife part.
Yeah, Laura Goodman, the range management specialist, extension specialist, she's going to talk about some work they've done, you know, looking at that Old World Blue Stem and how it affects wildlife and how they can, you know, change the composition of that stand to bring more benefit to wildlife. We look at Old World Blue Stem, it's got a lot of advantages, but, you know, it's when we grow it as a monoculture, or if it's the only thing out there, you know, and it gets mature, it's not real wildlife friendly, and most of us have goals for multiple uses on these, you know, on our land. We're looking at, you know, wildlife and grazing by our livestock as well. So they're going to spend some time talking about some of the research they've done to you know, look at Old World Blue Stems and how it affects wildlife, and then changing that utilization of some of those areas.
Yeah, I talk a lot of wildlife on our ag show here, but you know, wildlife and agriculture go hand in hand because they both need to exist, and we depend a lot on our landowners, whether they're just a landowner or the farmer or they're a rancher, to help out with wildlife, because wildlife and insects are very important to our ecosystem.
Oh yeah, so yeah. And we lose sight of some of that.
Yes, we do.
Sometimes.
And then you got one more thing before we need to take a break. If you're just joining us, I got Paul Beck. He's our extension livestock specialist from the Oklahoma State University. And we're talking about the research station field day coming up at the Marvin Clemmie Range over here by Bessie, over here right off I-40, not too far south of there. And before we take a break, we're going to talk one more thing about hay storage.
Yeah, so the Western Area Livestock Specialist, Dana Zook from the Northwest office and Marty New from the Southwest office, have been doing some hay storage demonstrations, and they're going to just kind of do some demonstrations on hay storage and what's the most effective way to store hay, stack hay and that type of thing to decrease the loss that we have when we're storing that hay. And we spend a lot of time putting hay up, and then we'll stack it under a tree or something to kind of get it to the side of the field. But, you know, that's not probably the most effective way to store that.
No, or, and, there's a or lot park of waste it, that comes. Or park it in a water hole.
So. Oh, yeah, yeah. Then you get a big rain and it all floats away.
Yeah, or maybe you should move your hay out of the bottom fields before the flood comes. So, that's yep. Not the I've seen some floating down the North Fork of the Red River before, so but it, sometimes this stuff gets in. Well, Paul, if you'll hang on a minute, I need to take a short break, and when we get back, we're going to talk about your recent interview on SUNUP on the Oklahoma State University show there, and we'll be right back after this. It's Today in Ag with Jimmy Clark on 96.5 KECO.
This is the Elk City Livestock Auction Market Report for Friday, September 10th. 1,617 head were sold. 4 head of steers at 465, brought 197.50. 44 at 532, brought 170. 6 at 618, brought 156. 14 at 652, brought 145.50. 17 at 709, brought 135. 5 at 990, brought 136. 8 head of heifers at 412, brought 147. 4 at 493, brought 142.50. 8 at 626, brought 132.50. 9 at 669, brought 139.50. 3 at 842, brought 132.50. 8 at 9 $9.86 for a 125. Butcher cows were $20 to $85.50. Bred cows $800 to $1,400. Butcher bulls $50 to $100. Pairs brought $10.75 to $12.50. Elk City Livestock Auction, South Highway 6 in Elk City, Oklahoma. Sale every Friday at 9 a.m. To consign, call Brandon Hickey at 580-497-6095.
This is Jerry Nine, owner of the Woodward Livestock Auction. First sale last Tuesday, September the 14th. We sold 888 cows, bulls, and calves. Thursday, September the 16th, we sold 2,866 calves and feeders for a total of 3,754 cattle for the week. Tuesday, better killing cows, 68 to 80. Thin cows bring 41 to 67. Bulls bring 76 to 101. 2 to 4 year old bred cows, 1250 to 1350. With a 5 to 8 year old bred cows, 800 to 1385. 9 and older bred cows, 700 to 875. 2 to 8 year old pairs, 1150 to 1360. With their 9 and older pairs, 1,000 up to 1250. Hunter steer cattle, 3 to 350 weight steers, 196 to 201. 4 to 450, 156 to 172. 5 to 550, 154 and a half to 160. 6 to 650, steers 149 up to 164. 7 to 750, 145 to 158. 8 to 850, 145 to 158. And 9 to 950 steers, 141 to 153 and a quarter. We sell 112 black steers, one bunch weighing 905, bring 153.25. Hunter heifers, 3 to 350 weight heifers, 170 to 177. 4 to 450, 155 to 164. 5 to 550 heifers, 139 up to 158. 6 to 650, 136 to 150. 7 to 750, 131 and a half to 148. With our 8 to 850 heifers, 134 to 139.50. 9 to 950, 112 to 127. And 1,000, 1,050 pound heifers, 98 to 123. For this Tuesday, September the 21st, we will have 40 bred cows and pairs, another 30 bred cows and pairs. We may have, give us a call to find out, 15 red Angus bred heifers. We'll see you this Tuesday, 8 a.m. sharp. Thanks again, Jerry Nine and the Woodward Livestock Auction.
We've been part of Western Oklahoma's ag industry since statehood. I'm Marty Maddox from Great Plains Bank in Elk City. We proudly support our local FFA labor auctions and premium sales. Our local lenders have a combined 127 years of banking experience. We handle all ag-related loans, like land purchases, farm operating loans, and stocker lines of credit. And we recently helped over 700 area farmers and ranchers with their PPP loans. Great Plains Bank in Elk City is here to lend agriculture a helping hand. Member FDIC.
From sunup till sundown, we know your irrigation equipment needs to be as hardworking as you, because we all know a farmer's job is never done. Valley is your strength in the field. We're the everyman brand. No matter your operational setup, we have the irrigation equipment and technology to move you forward. Valley products are built to last, easy to operate, and ahead of the curve. Durable, reliable, and built tough. This is Valley.
Contact your local Valley dealer, Knutson Irrigation, 1-800-373-9325, or online at KnutsonIrrigation.com.
Jimmy's all wound up and ready to go. Here comes more of Today in Ag with Jimmy Clark on 96.5 KECO.
All right. Welcome back. And still on the line with me is Paul Beck, Extension Livestock Specialist for the Oklahoma State University out of Stillwater, Oklahoma. Before we talk about your sunup interview that you did, Mr. Beck, what? How do people need to get a hold of anybody to come to that Marvin Clemming Range Research Station field day?
So I'm working with Marty New. His contact number is 405-880-3188. Zach Henderson, his contact number is 580-832-3356. Or you can contact me at 405-744-9288. The research station is kind of off the beaten path. The easiest way to tell people to get there is from exit 66 off from I-40 there by Clinton. Go south on 183 toward Cordell, about 6 miles. Then turn west on County Road E-1120, go 4 miles. And then turn north on County Road N-22 for about 1.75 miles to get to the station headquarters where we're going to start.
What was that? What road was that that you turned north on?
N-2200.
Oh, that's it. Yeah. I know how to get there, but if anybody didn't get that wrote down or anything, you can text me on the KECO Ag text line at 580-225-9697. and I'll get these directions or contact name to you. No problem. And then thanks for that. It looks like a fun day. I'm going to be out there. I'm going to come out there for a while, but obviously, you know, I got to be back here by lunchtime for the show. So I want to come out there and see you and meet some of those other people. And I'm really interested in the Stacey history and your supplement research and the neon presentations. I mean, I'm interested in all of it, but that's what I'm going to go focus on. So it should be a fun day. There's a lot of activity going on out there. And you're going to have lunch out there.
Yes, we will.
Okay, cool.
Sponsored by Master Hand Milling Incorporated. And so... you know, come eat a free lunch and see what we've been doing for the last few years.
Oh yeah, I'm good. It's been a while since I've been by there. I've worked on some some locations around that area, but I've just never been on it. But anyway, so it sounds like fun. Well, a few weeks ago, you did an interview on SunUp on Saturday morning, and you guys were talking, if I remember right, a lot about insects.
Yes.
And can you tell everybody what you were talking about in that interview that missed it?
So, you know, usually whenever we're talking about planting wheat for fall grazing, you know, I'm all in on getting started end of August, first of September, and getting, you know, wheat in the ground and, you know, get us a chance to get some really good early pasture. You know, at the latest, you know, September 15th or 20th, if we're going to try to plant some dual-purpose wheat. And, you know, most of the time that works out really well. This year, you know, just the amount of insects that we had lots of grasshoppers, and I know out where y'all are at, you know, in that Bessie and Clinton area, there's just grasshoppers everywhere, and there'd been some flights of armyworm moths and already some armyworm damage in through late August. And, you know, I essentially was just kind of like pull the reins back. You know, we need to really think about what we're doing when we're looking at planting wheat. You know, I talked to some farmers and some custom applicators that said that a lot of the chemicals for controlling these insect pests was a little bit hard to get, and just like a lot of the stuff we're dealing with this year. You know, so, you know, realize that we're going to, you know, significantly cut back on our fall forage yield potential. You know, it's about 30 pounds every day you delay from the 1st of September to the middle of September in fall forage production. So then if you go past that, it becomes even more. You know, it could be about 60 pounds per day if we're delaying from the 1st of September all the way to the 1st of October. So we can, you know, really impact what we can do as far as stocker cattle in the fall. On that fall forage production based on our normal planting dates. But if you get it planted and it comes up and you got a really good stand, you know, then we have it destroyed by these fall armyworms. You know, you're either looking at replanting, which is a lot of expense, or, you know, trying to just get by with half a stand. So these armyworms were a big issue, and, you know, you know, trying to, you know, maybe convince people that this would be the kind of the year to delay, at least for a while, our planting, just because of, you know, the dry conditions and those insects that we'd have issues with.
Well, they have, so I know you've been associated with agriculture since you went to, and since you are told earlier, 1991. Have you heard through the grapevine? Is this one of the worst years we've ever had with, like, not grasshoppers but armyworms?
You know, I was talking to some of our extension specialists, and they're comparing it to 2016, which I think was one of the worst we had had, and you know, it's just you know, we have continual flights of armyworms, you know, usually it kind of happens. We have a generation come in, and we can catch them at one of the earlier levels of maturity, like instar 2 or 3, before they start doing a whole lot of damage. But, you know, that year we had multiple generations in a lot of our pastures at the same time. So anything from, you know, that sixth instar to, you know, to a, you know, a newly hatched, you know, caterpillar. And, you know, so by the time you catch it, it's real hard to kill those big ones that they're the ones doing the most damage. And then you have a whole another crop of the little ones. And then, you know, so that's kind of the worst I've seen it was back about 5 or 6 years ago.
Well, I read an article where, you know, Arkansas was just covered in army worms and with the moss, the whole nine yards, probably different generations like you were just talking about, and Hurricane Ida come through, and that storm was so strong that it picked a lot of those insects up, and they end up landing in Ohio. And I mean, this article was real, and they said, you know, they had never seen army worms in Ohio until this hurricane brought them in here, you know, end of August, and they just got caught totally off guard with it.
Yeah, and you know, those kind of, you know, factors can really impact things. The army worms don't overwinter here in a normal winter, and I'm sure they didn't here, but, you know, they'll go into corn and grain sorghum and a lot of those crops, and you know, whenever we were just continuous wheat, probably wasn't such a big deal. But, you know, now with the different crops and you know, everybody's producing, we have different places for those army worms to go and hatch and multiple generations, and with each generation there's more and more of them. So, you know, that's kind of what we're looking at for, you know, wheat pasture this year. They've just had multiple opportunities to reproduce, and you know, now we've got, you know, fairly high numbers or we did, you know, about a month ago.
Right.
You know, these army worms are most active are at about 82 degrees Fahrenheit, you know, low 80s. So, and they keep going until our frost. The good thing we have is it takes about 30 days for each generation. So if we could start planting now, we start getting wheat up, you know, next week, end of September, first of October, when we start getting it up, we've only got about, you know, 20, 30 days or one generation of those worm potential before we start looking at it, you know, good chance of having our first frost, and hopefully, you know, we're going to start getting some cooler weather to kind of slow down the generation interval on these things.
Yeah, it's you know, alfalfa is the army worms, the especially one of their favorite crops, and I get to watch mine, and I got lots of alfalfa growing around the house over there, and I get to watch the neighbors. Last week, I seen lots of yellow moss flying around my neighbor's alfalfa field, and it wasn't but a few days, and he was cutting because, you know, the alfalfa was mature enough that, you know, there wasn't no use wasting spray, I'm guessing. I didn't ask him, but it wasn't very long after I started seeing all those yellow moss that he was cutting her down, getting her dead. So, but...
Yep, that's kind of, a lot of times, that's your best bet. You know, if it's close to time to harvest, you know, go ahead and get it moved, because I've seen them in, you know, central and eastern Oklahoma so thick that you could see the line of dead material behind where they've been, and they'll just graze right across the field and look, you know, like a harvester going through. So there's not a lot left once those, you know, mature big worms start working through a field.
Yep. Well, thank you so much for being on the show today. We're starting to run short on time, and I will keep announcing this deal from the Marvin Clemming Range Research Day. And I had a guy text in that I should do a live remote out there. I'm going to check with the boss, see if I can actually do a live remote out there. Maybe I won't miss your lunch. So,
well, that'd be great. We're looking forward to seeing you out there to do that. That'd
oh, yeah. Good. Look forward to seeing you. Haven't met Marty New. I'd like to meet him. And, Of course, I know Zach. He's been in here with me a couple times, and he keeps me up to date with what's going on in Beckham and Wichita County. And I'm sure you're going to have some more county extension educators out there from the other county. So it'll be a fun day.
Yep, we're really looking forward to it and like to see it. A lot of people out there.
All right. Well, I'll keep pushing it on people, and we look like the weather, when the Long Ranger, the weather's going to be pretty decent, so it should be a good time, which, you know, it's Oklahoma. The weather can change overnight. But you have a great Monday, and thanks for being on, sir.
Thank you, Jimmy.
All right. See you later.
Well,
after this break, we'll come back with the Hobart Farm and Garden Long Ranger forecast and talk about some hay reports. And it's the Day in Ag on 96.5 KECO.
Is your cattle mineral investment being washed away? Weather can cause conventional mineral to absorb water and blow away. Simply put, your cows probably aren't eating it. That's why Purina created Wind and Rain Storm Mineral, a weatherized mineral that can stand up to the elements. Its larger particle size makes it harder to blow away and easier for water to pass through it. Keep money in your pocket. Contact Farmers Union Co-op of Elk City today.
Hi, I'm James with Western Equipment. Listen up, any high school junior and senior, and any parent or grandparent of any high school junior or senior. By your junior and senior year, it's time to start planning for a job. Right now, if you don't know what you want to do, check out the John Deere AgTech program through Western Equipment. It's a two-year program, and afterwards, we guarantee you a solid job at one of our 21 locations in Texas, Oklahoma, or New Mexico. Now is the time. Visit west-equip.com/careers for more information to apply.
It's so convenient for farmers and ranchers to get what you need in one place. The Wheeler General Store is the do-it-best hardware store that carries vet supplies to doctor your animals, high-pro feed, also master hand milling and smart lick tubs. Delivery is available if you need it. And at Wheeler Ag, right there on site, they've got dry fertilizer application with blending capabilities. Wheeler General Store and Wheeler Ag on Highway 152, a mile east of the four-way stop in Wheeler, Texas.
You can also find the Wheeler General Store on Facebook and Instagram.
This hour's weather is brought to you by Hobart Farm and Garden.
Complete nutrition for every animal. That's what you'll find at High Pro Feeds. At High Pro, their commitment to nutrition is unwavering. Buy the best and get the most out of every animal. Hobart Farm and Garden in Hobart, Oklahoma is your local High Pro Feeds dealer, providing quality feeds in bulk, bags, and sacks. Check them out on Facebook and online at HobartFarmAndGarden.com.
He loves talking about farming and ranching. Here's more of Today in Ag with Jimmy Clark on 96.5 KECO.
Nah, man, I'm hoarse today. Welcome back. That was a great conversation with Professor. He doesn't like to be called Professor, but unless he's in Stillwater, so he can't come kick my butt. But Professor Paul Beck, OSU Extension Animal Beef Specialist. That is going to be a really fun day after talking with him at the Marvin Fleming Range Research. You guys should plan on doing that September 29th, coming up next week. It'll be, I can give you information if you didn't hear him, or you can listen to my show again on Facebook, or go to KECOFM.com and go to the Today in Ag Show, tab on today's show, and you can scroll through there and listen to my conversation with him. He's a very interesting guy to talk to. He talks to you like you don't have to be an Einstein. How's that? Does that make sense? Well, the Hobart Farm and Garden Long Ranger forecast, it says 97 for today, but looking at, let me get back to this map here. I'm going to tell you where that cold front is, and yep, it's getting closer. We should, I'm going to say the wind probably already switched out of the north, but it's in Roger Mills County and Dewey County for sure. Here we go. It just updated. The wind is out of the west northwest now right here in Elk City. 12 miles an hour, gust up to 17 miles an hour. Tonight, mostly clear, 60 degrees. Tomorrow, 78 for a high. Tomorrow night, Sandy, get ready. We're going to light up the fire pit tomorrow night. 49 degrees tomorrow night. 81 for a high Wednesday. 51 for a low Wednesday night. Thursday, 86 degrees. Low Thursday night, 56. High Friday, back to 91 degrees. It looks like a great forecast. It'll be a nice week. The USDA announced this spring an expanded conservation reserve program, which we all know as the CRP program, and upped annual payments to producers in hoping of increasing the acreage amount environmentally sensitive removed from production up to 15 years. So this is a new program. It looks like they've come out with for this coming spring. They want to enroll some more acres with higher payments and new incentive. However, research this spring by, it's just K-State did some research, and what they're after is maybe helping with some of the global warming by putting more, taking more acreage out of farming and putting back into grass. So that was going to be good. Well, here's from some of my buddies out there in the Texas Panhandle. The direct hay report for September. Got a couple other things to talk about. Went out to Shamrock this weekend. JB and I did. Had a good time out there at Shamrock at the Shamrock Fall Classic 2-day golf tournament. We didn't do bad. We didn't do great. We ended up coming in fourth or fifth out of 54 teams. So that wasn't too bad. We messed up yesterday a couple holes, and we were one place out of the money. So it was a great weekend. Got to play with Toby Davis and Keegan Hall from over here at Elk City yesterday. I heard of them. I know they're good golfers and everything, but there was some really it was fun to play with them. Nice guys, and I'm glad to got to meet them. But there was a lot of farmers and ranchers playing in that tournament this weekend, so I told them I'd give them some Texas updates this weekend. Compared to the last report, hay prices are mostly steady to $10 lower. Trading activity and demand were very moderate. Hay trade has slowed a little bit as producers are still harvesting some hay and building up supplies for the winter. Pasture conditions are beginning to deteriorate across the state, mainly in West Texas and the Texas Panhandle, with dry conditions reported amongst all of Texas except for East Texas, where the hurricanes have hit in the last couple weeks here. Here we go. Additionally, army worms comes up every time there's conversation around here. Additionally, army worms have been reported in portions of the east and the west, while former Hurricane Nicholas soaked the western Gulf Coast region, the south, and the Texas Panhandle, and out far out west are still doing short-term drying, according to the U.S. Drought Monitor. This is a little fun information, not fun, but is interesting. How's that? I come across the monthly fever tick situation, Texas fever tick situation, and it's crazy. There is almost, in seven counties that I looked up, there's almost 900,000 acres in South Texas under quarantine because of the fever tick. Biggest county right here, Zapata, if I say that right, I probably didn't say it right, 288,974 acres under quarantine with 34 active cases. So when I worked in South Texas down there, there was a trailer down there on the river, and I couldn't figure out what it said. It said USDA, and there was some mean dogs out there in the pens, and this guy come out, and he was just no cowboy, weathered and everything, and that was his job, to ride horses with his dogs along the border, along the river, and they'd randomly dispose of a rabbit or a coyote or something through there. That's what the dogs were for, and he would check those animals for fever ticks because they are devastating, as you can see, with everybody, all those cattle herds down there quarantined. It's crazy. So anyway, great Monday to everybody. Thanks for listening to the show. If you guys got any questions or anything, be sure to holler at me. You can text me on the text line. Have a great day, and God bless.